Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Issue 35. Or episode, excuse me, 35.5. Wow.
Close enough.
I am one of your hosts, Pat, and with me, as always, is...
Nat.
Cat and Hat.
Yay.
Paper hats.
So this is our coveted 0.5 episode in which we do nothing but comics reviews. We got a lot for you this week, as well as an additional segment, or...
Not necessarily segment,
tag?
But...
Tag, I think, would be a good thing. So we, here at Capes and Scales West, decided that we will address, in our main show, we have our Top of the Stack, which is our favorite book, and we decided to add another one, which is our Cape and our Scowl. So now in our 0.5 episode, we have two comics. One would be our Cape, which is our second Top of the Stack, per se.
I think Cape could be something that would be your overall favorite, or maybe something
that...
Especially
the way that we do Top of the Stack now, which is whatever you read first, yeah. might not necessarily
yes.
be your favorite.
So Cape would be our favorite, yeah. and then a Scowl is our least favorite from the week. So.
Yeah.
It's not even necessarily... I wouldn't... It'll be explained. The Scowl will be for a reason.
The Scowl, yeah, will be for a reason, dependent on who is doing the Scowl and why
and
they're scowling.
We will explain our
Scowl.
So as we go through, each of us gets one, each of us three gets one cape and one Scowl, and we will explicitly mention what that cape and what that Scowl is when they are brought up. But with that being said, let's just get straight into the reviews.
Right.
What do you have for us, Kat?
Alright, I've got some quick hits. We've got Infinity Wars number 5 with Jerry Duggan and then Mike Diodato Jr., I believe?
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting close to the end of this wrap-up here. I'm not super sure what's going on entirely because, I don't know, I'm not really good with Marvel Universe stuff. It was like some convoluted DC story. But yes, I know everything that's happening. But basically, of course, Loki betrays everyone because he's Loki. And it looks like Gamora has actually lost her stones. That's why they assembled this team. Because
that's
they're
a
the
weird
best...
statement to say.
I know, right?
Oh, yeah, I think that one. apparently,
she
this is the best team, and they were the best team to use the certain stones. So
the team
why...
on the cover?
Yep.
Which
oh,
is
nice.
Incredible Hulk.
Ant-Man, Emma Frost, Kang... Ms. Marvel, and Loki didn't have anything to do with it. It was just those
interesting
those few.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't really get how it really worked because I didn't understand it, but I bet someone who knows more about Marvel than me could explain it to you. So, now we have Superhero Adventures Mealtime Mayhem, which is it's a few different artists. It's just it's a few different ones. It's another one of those. It's like the spooktacular one that I did.
With the fun all
yeah.
ages.
Yeah, the all
Funko
ages
pop
one.
Look.
Yeah, and
there's a credit on the cover that I'm really curious about.
It had the cobwebs again, and then they had like a spoof on Archie with Hawkeye in there. It's,
oh, but this one is basically like the Thanksgiving themed one.
It wasn't
right?
Thanksgiving themed though.
Oh, it wasn't.
Yeah,
oh.
It made me a little sad. It's aww. Not my Scowl. We're not quite at the Scowl yet. This made me sad. I wasn't viscerally angry about it. So, I was hoping for some Thanksgiving-y. I didn't really get any. There was a mention of pie, and that's about as Thanksgiving-y as it gets.
fair enough.
So I liked it. It's good for kids, especially if you want to get them into comics early.
Nice. Indoctrination is always good.
I mean, that's how I make kids, that's how I get kids to read. I'm like, here's a comic book.
know,
read
right?
more. All right. Now we've got Shatterstar number 2 by Tim Seeley and Carlos Villa is our artist. I really like this book. I think it's enjoyable. I didn't realize it was only a limited five issue series. So his tenants were kidnapped. He's trying to get them back, and basically he's like on an intergalactic reality show where he has to fight people to the death to get it, and in between those fights that's the time he has to get his tenants back. So he's, and Grandmaster is the one who is orchestrating the whole thing. So
oh,
he
nice.
Literally made an intergalactic,
it's my birthday.
Jeff Goldblum.
I'm sorry, every time the As Guardians of the Galaxy comic book comes up when I'm doing filing, I just hear his voice going, Asperg.
Alright, so now we've got, going down our list somewhat quickly, we have the Avengers Halloween special. It's all right. I mean, it's another one where it's a bunch of short stories. There wasn't really any that I was like, yo, oh my god, this was great. And
was it spooky?
Dude, the first one, like, freaking Daredevil gets his sight back, and it's like, he gets hallucinogenic drugs in his eyes, so he just sees people, and he, like, kills people because he sees things that aren't there. It's weird.
That's creepy.
Yeah. Spooky. And honestly, for $4.99... for the mass of the stories, it's worth the $4.99.
Nice.
So, I'm nice. In a sound effect mood today, guys. I don't know what's going on.
Do it, soundboard that.
we'll get you a soundboard. Next up is X-Men Red number 10. I'm not really going to go too in-depth about it, but honestly, I'm salty right now because this is actually a decent comic, and I think it's going away. I'm pretty sure it's going away, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems like it's going away.
It seems like it's going away, and you've made me sad and slightly upset. That's rude of you. Don't take this away from me.
That cover with Jean Grey's hand reaching out makes me feel like she's reaching into my soul. And I'm not kidding. Like, I look at the image and it's like, it's one of those where, like, her hand and her eyes follow you wherever you are.
So for that one, too, for X-Men Red, you've got Tom Taylor and I think it might have, I don't know, Rose Antonio? Is the artist? Is that the same artist?
No, that's the third artist on the book now.
Huh. Anyways. Still good. The story's great. Good job, Tom Taylor. Go you.
Yay!
So finally, we have come to my scowl of the week.
Uh-oh. No!
So
we're all making scowls right now.
Pretty much. So, Typhoid Fever X-Men by Clay... Oh my goodness. I'm gonna skip your middle name because that Clay Chapman, and then artist is Will Robinson and Dan. Did I type this wrong?
I can't read my own typing.
I just have to make sure because I've never heard of a name Danlid, so I'm making sure I didn't add an extra D on X. No, I didn't. Oh, maybe it's an O. I don't, okay.
What's the name? Just try to pronounce it for us.
I don't know if it's a D.
Oh, Danilo.
Oh, Danilo. Oh, yeah, that's a bad font.
Yeah, that's
a bad font.
I was like, wait, what is that? Because the D and the O literally looks the exact same. So, story-wise, awesome. Great. You're dealing with Typhoid Mary, who is amplifying her psychic abilities via another mutant.
Nice.
The scowl comes in when it comes to the art. I honestly, when I was reading it, when I was reading it, I was like, I did my best to basically just read the word bubbles and not look at the art.
That's so unfortunate.
That's a really, like, that comes across as more scathing, I think, than it is, but it, like, it sounds really bad.
I opened up to when it was, like, I opened up to when it was like when you hit the point where the X-Men show up, I'm like, no, we're done. I can't with this book. And the other part of it is too, is on the cover, her face is split with a lighter white and then like a normal
flesh tone.
A normal flesh tone. In the majority of the comic, that doesn't exist, but she has a weird fucking line in her face.
So it's like a miscommunication between pencil or inker and colorist.
Yeah.
A big one, man.
Wow. That's crazy.
So, it's worth the story. It's worth the art.
Damn. As we scowl at the cover.
If the cover had been the same...
Scowl.
As the inside, I probably would have been fine. But it was not, so...
Cool. Well, I guess sort of jumping off of that, sticking to Marvel and talking about art, we got X-23... Operation 6, this is written by Mariko Tamaki, and there's a new artist since the last issue, new story arc, and it's Georges Duarte, or I think Georges. This one was a lot of fun. Mariko Tamaki, he obviously knows how to write both Honey Badger and Wolverine, because their conversations are just amazing. That's all I gotta say. Just read X-23 just to listen to them talk.
Mariko Tamaki is a she, right?
I don't know.
I believe so. I'm not entirely sure, though. So
not that it matters. Just
yeah. I'm pretty sure she's a she, but who knows? Gender is fluid these days. Next, I have a really unexpected one. This is Auntie Agatha's Home for Wayward Rabbits, issue number 1. written by Keith Giffen and art by Benjamin Roman. Roman. Don't know where to put the stress on that. I don't know what this book is. It feels like a Tim Burton movie.
Oh.
And a comic. Like, everything. It feels like I'm reading, like, tonally Coraline. Or, okay. I mean, that's not Tim Burton. That's Laika Studios. But like,
similar.
I don't know. Maybe you can flip through the art, Matt, since you're the art guy, and just, like, look at like, the style.
Oh, I thought that bunny had a plunger on his head.
Really cute rabbits. And then just the way they talk and interact is really creepy. And, like, the girl, like, the main character, her eyes are, like, so big and so cute that it's, like, borderline creepy. And it makes me think of what's-her-name from Corpse Bride, the Corpse Bride, you know?
Oh, yeah, I can't think of it.
This is, like, I don't really know how to describe this art. It's very much like, we'll call it Netflix cartoon. Because there's, like, there's a new stylistic choices that seem to be being made. And it's, like, it's, yeah, weird. There's definitely some CG elements that are happening here, too, which I don't think lend themselves to this, because it's making it look that much more creepy. So
yeah, so I'm really interested. And storyline, too, is really, I have no idea where it's going in a good way. Like, there's a lot of crazy things happening
in a really subtle way. The rabbit food says 99.9% chemically enhanced.
Yeah. No, I know. There's just, like, little like, moments in dialogue where they talk about some of the grimmest, like, things in this really cutesy style.
See, that's the thing,
style.
Is, like, I sit here and I'm like, when you think of bunnies,
but
you don't think of creepy bunnies. You just think of cute little fuzzy bunnies.
It still is an all-ages book, though. There's no cursing. There's just one part where she gets, like, hit in the face. But so
this is an image book.
Yes, image all ages.
Wait, they do all ages.
It's actually a T rating.
Oh, a T rating.
Yeah.
I would definitely not give it to your younger kids unless they are more advanced readers, because just tonally it's very dark. Even though what they're doing is kind of light. I don't know.
Gotcha.
Next I have The Wicked and the Divine, The Funnies number one. This is written by Gillian McKelvin and art by Wilson Cowles. So this was basically a series of, like, silly, like, one-off stories. And if you're a Wicked and the Divine fan like I am, they're all hilarious. Basically half of the stories are making fun of the gods, and the other half is the writer and the artist shitting on themselves, basically. Like,
they have a sense of humor.
Yeah, like they go into a bar and Kieran the writer starts, like, spouting off, like, essays basically in his words, and Jamie is he's, like, drawing himself as, like, a fucking, like, idiot brute kind of guy. Like, here's them walking into the bar together, and they're just like, he's like, "Oh, my name's Jamie, isn't it? I'll come in here, I'll beat you up, isn't it?" He's like, yeah. And then just all these, it's hilarious. And then there's a great one with Sockmet, who's the cat goddess, but she's, like, really violent, and it has basically,
like,
two strips of her being a cat. Basically, I'll give it to you, you'll probably like that. She's, like, walking across her roommate's keyboard and stuff, and, like, just sleeping in the box and doing everything. It's hilarious.
She's in a box. That's great.
Yeah. And so just a lot of good fun.
Nice.
What do you have for us next, Nat?
Am not an original person, and I don't have anything that I read uniquely, so Kat and I are going
to
talk.
If somebody gave this to me as a sheet, I would hang it up somewhere.
We're going to go into Batman Secret Files number one. This is a one-shot series of short stories by different artists and writers highlighting the Batman.
Yay, short stories.
So there's a Tom King written one. There's one by art by Jill Thompson.
Speaking of that story in particular, that is actually my cape of the week. That story specifically.
That's how much
I liked it.
Yeah, Superman gives Bruce a piece of platinum kryptonite, and
because Tom King is insane. Yeah,
it says platinum kryptonite. It gives you powers like Superman's.
For for and all he has to do is touch it once and he'll have powers for the rest of his life.
Yep. And it's just a really, like, introspective, and it's like 3 pages long.
That tells you a lot.
Which is interesting that that's your capo, because that's not even my favorite story in here.
The Nature of Heroes is creepy as shit.
Yeah, I actually like the one where Bruce is hunting Man-Bat in the wilderness.
Oh, really?
Because I love archery, and he actually has a bow that flexes, and it's actually a bat bow.
I thought it was, that's right, it was a bow. For some reason, I was thinking it was like a crossbow.
Gotcha. No, it's a compound. It's beautiful.
Which makes more sense, because the bow itself is going to be... crossbows look too much like guns.
Yep. Yeah, this was just a really fun, like, one-off. I love getting the secret files whenever they do put them out. I have one from, like, 2002, so... Yeah, it was great to see this again.
The color's pretty sweet, too.
The foil.
I love the textures of it, too.
Yeah, the textures of the bats that are on it. Yeah, it's just a really cool, fun presentation. And easy for anybody to just pop in.
Oh, yeah. They're just cute little short stories. And you even get one with him and Detective Tramp, and it's called The Greatest Detective.
Featuring Batman.
Featuring Batman. That's right. There's some
the implication being that that the chimp is the better detective. All right, and then another one that Kat and I read is What If Magic, M-A-G-I-K, became Sorcerer Supreme? This, I want to make sure I get the names right. So it was written by Leah Thompson with art by Felipe Andrade. And this is my cape of the week. This is fucking awesome. Like, I was so happy reading through this.
I think you said Thompson.
Did I say Leah Thompson?
I feel like you did. I feel like I'm not going crazy.
Leah Williams. Yeah, Leah Thompson is a really awesome actress who appeared in Back to the Future. but anyway, this is the story of, it's like retelling Magic's origin from the perspective of her escaping from hell through her portals to be taught by Doctor Strange. So Doctor Strange is going
to
teach her.
I really wish this would be a short series.
Yeah, me too. Sign me up. And it has to have this artist too. Like, this is so fucking gorgeous.
Wow.
See, I don't know. I don't like I felt it was messy for me, and that's what it
did. What?
It reminds me a lot of the art style in Shade, The Changing Woman.
I don't know how, I'm really interested in seeing, what would you say is messy about it?
I think it's the, just like the facial expression, like the faces of the characters, I think is what it is. They kind of weird me out because of how, just how they're structured. It's very, like, not that picture in specific, but like the very beginning of it.
See, and I love the simplicity of all of the designs.
And I think,
like,
that's what it is. It's the simplicity of it that bothers me.
For any of you haven't noticed, I hate realism in comic books.
And I don't.
Yes, I love Alex Ross. No, I'm not a big Brian Hitch fan. So, yeah, this reminds me of, like, Kyari Andrews' artwork from, Immortal Iron Fist. I don't know. I just loved this. This, like, it hit every note. It made me want to go watch the Doctor Strange film again. Like,
would you say it's your cape of the week?
I did say it was my cape of the week.
Right. Well, that's good, guys.
I also like this falling sequence.
Falling sequence made me want to vomit.
So, yes. Like I said, it reminds me a lot of Shade.
Yeah, there's a lot of psycho elements to it.
Explicitly showing, like, this intangible world.
Yeah.
And in a very tangible way that makes sense. It's cool.
Do you have anything else that we cross over on that you want to hit?
Just Star Wars, Han Solo, Imperial Cadet. Yeah, we've got Robbie Thompson as our writer, and then Leonard Kirk, I believe, as our artist. It was an interesting story. I honestly don't care. I like more stories that have to do with Jedi, so I don't really care too much about anything outside of that.
Yeah, this is actually my scowl, is Star Wars Han Solo Imperial Cadet. And it isn't for a particular reason of not enjoying the book. It's that they've devoted almost 10 pages to recapping, like, the first scene of Solo, a Star Wars story. And didn't get into the Imperial Cadet aspect of it until almost halfway through the book.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I haven't seen the movie, so it was just.
But you have to admit, like, when Han steals the TIE fighter, that's when shit gets interesting, and that's what I want to read from this series. Is give me the stuff, like, the stuff that we didn't get in the movie that is really Han being Han.
They talked about how he got his last his last name or whatever.
Which was once again in the Solo film.
See, and I didn't see the movie. But for me, like I said, when it comes to Star Wars, if it doesn't have to do with Jedi, like if Jedi are not a part of it, I literally have no interest in it.
I'm very much in like that mythology camp of Star Wars as well. So. It's still a, like, I think it's a worthwhile read, but know going in that there's going to be a lot of recap. This is very much
if
a
you honestly, issue. If you like, if you're a fan of Star Wars and you like all of the Star Wars universe, you'll like it. For me, I was just like, eh. Yeah.
Well, cool.
There's not Jedi. Meh.
Where's the lightsabers? Meh.
Yeah, exactly. There's no Sith. Meh.
Sith, see? Meh. Oh, my goodness.
All right.
Well, you want to hop into a couple of ours now?
Yeah, go for it. You can start us off.
Should we start with my cape of the week?
Oh, brr, 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 brr,
brr. This is Sparrowhawk, number 2 of 5, written by Delilah S. Dawson and illustrated by Matthias Basla.
See, whenever we talk about the cape of the week, I just hear like the whooshing sound. That's it.
It's like trimming.
Yeah. Yeah. This book, issue number 1, we talked about it. A few episodes ago. Issue number 2 is so much better. Like, issue 1 was good. Issue 2 is spectacular.
This is one of those series that I actually want to see somebody, bless you, try to adapt. Because I want to see, like, an animated fucking scary movie. Like, this is not friendly.
This would make a great animated film. Absolutely.
This is terrifying.
Yeah, every aspect.
Yeah, because I need that in my life. Fucking scary.
Okay,
cartoons.
there's a point in here. So, bless you. This was billed as Fairy Fight Club, like, was one of the original solicits. And this issue, you kind of understand what they mean. Like, to survive in this world, you really have to kill. Like, you're and you get bonuses like in fucking RPG, man.
Yeah.
Like the more you kill, the better your stats are.
She kills the big guy in her wings, bro.
Oh, but the way, like, the choice to kill, so she doesn't, like, she wants to be the good-hearted hero. So she's not like, I can't just kill something. So it becomes a, wait a minute, now you've threatened me? I'm going to slice you in half.
Yeah,
it sounds like things escalated rather quickly.
Look at that panel too, like the one shot slash through.
The dynamic art style in this is just absolutely gorgeous. Like the more and more world it introduces, the more and more I'm certain that this is the perfect artistic choice for the story that's being told.
And spoilers at the end of this book, because she's done another kill, she finally sheds her skin and. Basically has an armored dress now that is like her skin.
Yeah, she molts, like they specifically call it a molt.
Yes, that's right.
Because she's teamed up with this weird,
I mean,
semi-evil,
no one can see my face,
jackalope,
but it's like
jackrabbit with antlers, and it's pretty evil. And now she has the son of the evil queen, who's actually a pacifist.
Yeah.
So they're both, like, telling her, you know, the evil thing is, like, it kills. It wants to kill. Murder. Murder. And then the prince is like, you don't have to kill anything. You never have to kill anything.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, maybe I'll kill a few things.
Right, yeah. Like, you know, it's like, if it threatens me, I'm going to kill it. You know? Like, that's normal. Great design. Great art. I mean, I don't know who to compare it to. It's kind of a simplified mix of, like, Chris Somney and, oh, I apologize, but the artist on Coda, like, there's just, this is a sleeper hit, in my opinion. There's just, this book is gonna, it's something you should read.
I really hope it gets licensed into an animated film.
Yeah. Like, a Netflix animated movie would be great. Something that's gonna be able to do an R rating and not be, like, they did not pull the punches.
Oh, yes.
God,
it just makes me think of freaking, what was it? Devil Crybaby or whatever.
Oh, yeah, whatever. Yeah, we'll move way past that one.
Yep, something along those lines. Yeah, great. I'm so excited to see where this goes. Next up, I guess we have, this is Blackbird issue 2. This is written by Jen Bartel with art by Sam Humphries.
It's written by Sam Humphries and Jen Bartel with art by Jen Bartel.
Oh, okay.
So they co-write. She does the art.
I got those around. Never mind. So Jen Bartel, artist and co-writer. Sam Humphries, also co-writer. We got Sparrowhawk, we got Blackbird.
Fly, Robin, fly!
Yeah.
Cuckoo, cuckoo, cricket egg on it!
No, I have to go listen to that song in my car.
I think that this book is progressing in such an interesting way. Like, the things that I... The one issue I had of it, with issue number one, is I wasn't sure about her inner monologue, whether it was, like, too cheesy or if right. If it fit her character. And now I know it's good. It's, like... It fits way better. We get... I don't know. It's...
There was a certain, like, the culture of the Paragons we got more of in this, and I thought that was really, it's really interesting, and the crystal seems like there might be a drug aspect to, which also plays into the lead character's personal life, is the fact that she is a drug addict and turns to pills, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting that you say that, because there's the scene, earlier in the book where she's drinking a glass of whiskey and then taking, like, the opiates.
Yep.
And then, later when she goes into the Paragon Temple, the magical nightclub, basically, they give her crystals, which, like, sit in her hand reminiscent of some sort of drugs that you get at the nightclub. And then she goes, and I guess you use them for magic.
Yeah, they're like, you have to have, I forgot, the circlet, I guess is what the bracelet is called, right?
A circ. CIRQUE.
So I recently just rewatched Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and it's an interesting thing to think about. Like, what really works in that movie is exploring magic culture in the 1920s perspective, and this is a really interesting reflection of exploring magic culture now. Like, what would be, like, a shoe-obsessed wizard, you know, like, who has, like, high fashion, and, like, the fact that the presentation of the wizards or the paragons is important. It's a really, like, it's a unique book. Yeah,
they all have, like, the fashion and the style that can, like, is only allowed, or only possible through magic, really.
Right.
It reminds me, I don't know if you ever watched The Magicians. As a show, so I feel like this is what The Magicians was trying to be, and, like, I watched, like, at least a season of it, and this in two issues has done more, like, story-wise and tonally and thematically than I believe, at least, in my opinion, that show has, so.
And kudos to the creative team for making a better second issue than first.
Yes, oh my gosh, all these birds are just taking off.
Sparrowhawk was an incredible first issue, though, too. So.
That's true, but so is Blackbird, I thought, and they're just getting better. So, kudos, yeah. Do you want to talk about... I just want to have to mention, since I just talked about my cape, I guess I'll mention my scowl. This is our crossover. So my scowl that Nat mentioned in issue one, or our last episode.
Episode 35, yeah.
Yeah. This is Outer Darkness, written by John Layman and art by Afu Chan, or Chan.
I think it's Afu Chan, but I think Chan. The way, like, saying it together, Afu Chan, is, like, what rolls off
you
the tongue.
The,
yeah.
Sound in there. I did not like this because Nat, he told me not to look at the second half of the page because of how, or the second half of the book, because it spoils how the engines run. So my mind instantly went to sacrifice, human sacrifice. So by not spoiling it for me, Nat, you spoiled the entire book for me, or you forced me to spoil it for myself.
I feel really bad, because I just didn't want him to flipping to the back of the book, because that's what people oftentimes do. I don't know why everybody flips to the back of the books, but it seems like watching people, everybody starts and they flip it to the back. It's like, don't do that. Don't flip to the back.
I never do that with comic books. I won't even open them.
If the cover
catches my eye, I'll walk away with it, but I won't open them.
You are a godsend, because I cannot. I don't have that gene for sure.
If I do open it,
it'll be like one page. It'll be the opening page, but normally it's just the cover.
I actually like to do that with novels. I'll read the last sentence before I read the rest of the book.
I will do that with books sometimes.
But the last sentence never spoils anything in a novel.
Okay, true.
It's more like a tonal thing.
Yeah.
You know, so... But that's a little bit of a tangent.
I love Outer Darkness number one.
I know you did, but... Cool. Oh, my gosh. So that was... Oh, yeah, I just had to throw that out there. Throw some shade.
Shh.
Well, let's move on to something else real quick.
So we got Border Town number 3, written by Eric Esquivel with art by Ramon Villalobos. Yeah. Why the fuck are you not reading this book?
Yeah.
like, that's...
Have you seen that reading stack? There you go.
That's that's the big question I have. Man, does this...
El Chito Cabra.
When they throw some race stuff at you, boy, you feel like shit.
Yeah, this is getting... This still, if it didn't have the fantasy aspect, like the high fantasy mythology aspect to it, this book would be too preachy.
This book would be
overly in your face about all these things. But because it is a fantasy book still,
yeah,
it, like, oh, wow.
God, watching Amy carve into her face.
Yes. Wow. Ooh. That scene. Ooh. And she's trying to... Well, it's interesting, because really, she's trying to expel...
Could have.
She's trying to expel the demons, and when she does, the guy, the principal that she carves it into her face in front, he faints, and she says, I guess it works.
Yeah, it looks like he might have a heart attack. Like, it's like he's...
Yeah, so he's some sort of monster. The way they deal with the chupacabras in the beginning, just by calling the police.
Oh, man. So the chupacabras in the mythology that they're building with this is that if you haven't really touched the magical world or the mythological world, then your brain has difficulties processing what a chupacabra is. So you see something you're afraid of that is still maybe outlandish, but easier to rationalize.
Yeah.
And the solution to getting rid of the chupacabras is to do the logical thing, is call the cops. And what the cops see are two black men robbing
two guys in hoodies.
Yeah.
Basically. One wearing a Kaepernick jersey.
Yep.
So
and that they shoot him dead.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's fucking dark. You know, like, that is some...
Yeah. That's...
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. It's just... No punches held at all.
No.
And then, yeah, it's getting more into, like, the classical mythology as well as...
Yeah. I hope Amy becomes, like, the Bruja. Like,
oh, yeah.
She, like, gets the witch powers.
That would be really cool. I love Quinteth.
Quinte,
yeah. He's becoming such a cool character.
I didn't know he spoke English. Like, that was a revelation to me. We have gone really long, you and I, Pat. So I think...
Well, that's fine. I'm Border Town reading. So, yeah. It's cool.
Well, here, let me include Kat real quick in this conversation, and I'll kick you out.
Yeah, I'll go sip some coffee.
So this is West Coast Avengers number 3 by Kelly Thompson and art by Stefano Caselli.
I don't know what the hell is going on in this comic. It's so freaking ridiculous.
All I know is it's hilarious.
It is hilarious.
Every single page has, like,
wait,
laugh out loud moments.
Do you care about her? I don't know.
Who is that?
Oh my god. The psychic dude. I can't think of his name.
Quentin?
Yeah, Quentin. Do you care about her? It's like you're asking a 10-year-old boy if he has a crush on a girl, and he's like, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, him standing there just like watching Gwen tie up the mouth of a giant lizard.
Apparently she doesn't have her powers.
Yeah, she's
like,
hilarious.
I guess this is like a revamp, but I don't have my powers.
Yeah, she's like, I should be able to just fall through the panels at this point, but I can't.
No, that's awesome.
And she's like, but my power is I will. But if anything is still there, I definitely won't die. So, you know, she obviously doesn't die. So, there's a little hope that she might still have her powers or whatever a little bit. But, yeah. Everything in this book is awesome.
Yeah, I would highly suggest it. It's a good laugh.
Mm-hmm. And then we get literal giant.
And then you have like two,
Hawkeye.
and then you have America Chavez or whatever, because they get Tigra back, and she just starts to beat the shit out of people.
Yeah, and just like little moments too, like Quentin's wearing a shirt that says Future Phoenix.
Yeah,
that just like I literally slapped my forehead.
Yeah,
I
showed Matt. Yeah, facepalm. There's little stuff, little jokes on every page.
Oh yeah, I think when they like rip open the house and she's like changing into her costume, she's like, not everybody can just transform into vibranium.
Yeah, and then Yeah, all the people keep coming into the fight or whatever. Yeah. Just random joggers, and Gwen's like, it's 5 a.m. Why are so many people coming to the beach now?
Why are you running towards the loud noise of yeah. the giant people? And it's just like stupid looking people like, hey, what's going on?
Yo. Just people like, oh, I'm out for my morning jog. And they're like, why are you here? Don't you see these giant kaijus fighting?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
So much.
West Coast Avengers, just a fun read. Just,
oh yeah,
just a great.
I don't even know where this is gonna go. I think at one point they actually run into. I don't remember. Never mind. I might be thinking of something else. I'm like, no, wait, maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. But no, it's freaking hilarious, and I yeah. love it. Oh, should you lead a superhero team? Probably not.
Well. I think that does it for our double crossovers, unless you two have any more that
that's like an amazing term, double crossover.
Double crossover, yeah. Now we have to go to our triple crossover.
Triple crossovers, it's like, man, I play for the Lakers, man. I can't do a triple crossover.
I was thinking like a triple agent, like a double agent and a triple agent kind of thing.
I was thinking of... yeah, like a double cross.
Yeah,
okay.
I got you.
Anyway, all right. Well, so. We'll leave with Marvel Knights 20th number one. I really think it's just called Marvel Knights number one, but for discussion
it's
purposes.
It's MK20.
Yeah, it's the 20th anniversary of the Marvel Knights franchise. This is written by Donnie Cates with art by Travel Foreman and inks by Derek Friedels.
His name is super interesting. Yeah. Travel Foreman.
So I think this is one of those that I really, really liked, and I think I liked it because of the reading experience.
I don't understand what's going on in this comic right now.
I think that's the point, is that you're with the characters. The characters don't know what's happening because they're being reawoken and having their complete backstories still. But they don't have access to that. And I think the choice of making Frank Castle a police officer.
It's hilarious.
It's really interesting, like, to have him, especially to be, like, a positive through line in the book.
Well, the other part of it is the opening page of the book is Matt Murdock at Karen Page's grave, touching it, and crying in the rain.
Yeah. As a
drenched.
That almost took me out of it, because having that as the first few pages, that I felt that it was a bit much, and so it kind of threw me off, but the more I read it, and the more it actually, like got into the story proper, the more I enjoyed it thoroughly. So I think I just got an initial bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah,
I know nothing about Daredevil, so I didn't even realize that Karen Page was dead. So
yeah, I didn't.
Karen Page has been dead for years.
I thought though, when he goes back to the law office and there's Jennifer Walters there.
Yeah, can she access her? Is she, like, that's the thing that I couldn't figure out. Can
whether she access her Hulk powers?
If she knows she can, or if she can.
Like, I don't think she knows she can.
Because, like, her hand turned light green.
Yeah.
The reveals in this are really what make the book. Because it's like,
well,
okay,
the worst part to that is when he hands him the ID, and he's like, see? And he's like, I don't see anything.
It's a blank card.
There's a lot of weird elements like that.
And then he sees the thing.
Right, but the thing sees Ben Grimm.
He looks
Grimm.
In the mirror, yeah, or in the window.
Yeah, he's
like, what, do I have something on my teeth?
Yeah, there's that, the idea that Banner is not the Hulk at this point, and he's just, like, help orchestrating the good side, if you will.
Yeah.
I also like the names crossed off the list are Frank Castle, Logan, and Steve Rogers. So that means Captain America is part of this story as well. Mm-hmm.
Same with Wolverine.
Right. I hate Wolverine. So I was talking about the good characters.
Don't sidetrack me.
If it ain't Old Man Phoenix, I don't care.
By the way, I just want to throw out that I've always wanted to have either a comic or a show that's Walters, Nelson, and Murdoch, attorneys at law.
And we almost got it.
It's so close. There's just a little tease.
Even looking through it right now, we were talking about
an amazing show.
The Fantastic Four element of it, and Daredevil's sonic sight, for lack of a better term, is definitely showing Ben Grimm as
things. Well, that's the other thing too. And then his neck is stretched, and Johnny Storm is on fire.
Yeah, oh. and the Invisible Woman is
like
faded.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep. So, like, he sees all of them as their superhero forms, but none of them realize it.
That makes me wonder if how we're seeing this then, because if they're all kind of like in their superhero-esque areas, then...
Yeah.
Well, how many, aside from Banner, Cap, and the Punisher and Castle know about this. You know, right. And Matt Murdock. It seems like there's only four people.
Well, it doesn't seem like he remembers anybody
else. And on the bad side, we have Kingpin and Bullseye, who sort of seem like they're getting there.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah, because of the villains don't remember.
He has that question mark on his thing that says Daredevil.
Right. And then we have Doom, Taskmaster, and Crossbones. And it's like, they're like, it's layer on layer of who's the bigger bad, who's going to be revealed next.
My other thing is I want to know who has their memories and what.
Well, yeah, is it, like, was it some sort of, like, event that led there?
After watching Daredevil, is it just me, or can, you have to read Kingpin's dialogue with the plot, with, like, the intonation and pauses that the, I forget his name, who plays Kingpin in the show.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yes, he does such a good job with the voice, like, his gravitas that, like, you're trying to read it fast to, like, get... I was trying to read it fast just because
You know what? And that actually took me out of the story because they played too much artistically with the large baby element of design for Kingpin, where it's the portrayal that does it good. Yeah, exactly. So I liked this. I thought it was a really, really great issue number one, and I think it's a reading experience. So hopefully we haven't spoiled too much of it, and you can enjoy it yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, I read it, because it's crazy.
Yeah.
All right.
Next, I guess, and finally, this is Heroes in Crisis number 2 of 9, written by Tom King and art by Clayman.
Actually, and Travis Moore did
Travis
two.
Travis Moore did two pages. I don't know what pages of it.
16 and 18.
I could not really tell the difference. I mean, you probably could because you're the artist guy, but...
I don't want to disappoint anyone, but I don't think I could.
Whoa, okay, that makes me feel a little bit better.
It may have been the flash pages now that I'm looking at it.
Yeah. So... Wow, the camera confessionals in this one
from the Trinity.
Yep, Batman, then Wonder Woman, then Superman.
Dude, wow. Poison Ivy's made me sad too.
Oh yeah, I forgot Poison Ivy's in there
so
too.
So does anybody else think Poison Ivy's dead?
I don't know. That's the thing is, I was like, so wait, Poison Ivy's dead? I'm about to go riot in the streets.
So all the camera confessionals from issue number one, all those characters were dead. But all the camera confessionals for this one. Or at least the Trinity, they can't be dead, they're the Trinity.
Opens with a Poison Ivy confessional.
Yeah.
And the rose over her ear that Harley takes is the one that she drops in the Gotham River.
Oh, that's what that is! I was wondering...
I want to know why she switched back to her original stuff, though.
I think this is an angry and upset Harley about what is going on.
We're not going to get... I kind of thought we were going to get a two Harley's story.
Maybe we will.
But it
seems like it is the singular Harley. This was it better than issue one? It's a good question, right?
It destroyed me more than issue one, probably.
This is a rough story.
Can I leave with that?
This is a really rough story. I like seeing Harley using the lasso of truth.
The best part is they're like, damn, she might be better than you. She's not better than me.
boys.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That was... Well, just the fact that she... Superman asked Batman if he had kryptonite, and Batman says no, and then Harley just lassos him and asks him where he's keeping the kryptonite, and Batman is just like, second pouch on the right.
in the lead container.
Yeah, exactly. And then Harley, distracts them all and jumps out. That was crazy.
And that her leaving, a reminder, really, Booster did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is really pitting that question, like, did Booster do it? Like, the story is unfolding in such a way that it's really hard to...
What is
going on with Booster, by the way? Because he goes to confront Flash about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's trying to do what Batman would do. And as you notice, every time he goes along, his percentage of this is what Batman would do drops.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's like, you can... Like, we're watching him lose his mind, basically.
There was a Tom King's Batman story. He did... There's a wedding gift arc where Booster Gold attempts to, as a wedding gift, fix Batman's past.
Yeah, resurrect his parents.
Yeah. Basically. And it goes pretty horrifically wrong.
Of course.
And in that universe, he witnesses Bruce Wayne shoot himself.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he tries to wipe the blood off, and he can't get the blood off of his visor, even though his visor is completely clean.
Yep.
So he's been starting a psychological breakdown because he tried to do a good thing as a wedding gift, and I think that's just rolling into this.
Is that why? I feel like at one point, yeah, because he even actually takes off his visor and wipes it at in a thing. I was wondering why that was.
I missed that. Where is that?
I wish comics had page numbers sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like nice. Almost halfway.
Exactly. It's after the Snickers ad.
Oh,
fuck
shit.
You.
Sorry.
Oh shit, you're right.
I mean, like, Tom King especially is a very meticulous writer. Mm-hmm. So he would not. Stuff that I don't understand, it'll stick with me because I'll be like, he did that. Why did he do that?
Yeah. I forgot about that. I didn't even think about it.
Yeah, I watched that and I was like, why did he take his visor off right then? Like, and I don't know. So that's very interesting that they included that bit.
It almost seems like Skeets is telling him that he did it too.
I think he's trying to, like, break the news to him, yeah. But he, like, sees that Booster is, like, losing more and more grasp on reality, so he's, like,
having to say, I'm 73% sure this is what Batman would do.
Yeah, I'm 60% sure what Batman... I'm 43% sure this is what Batman...
I'm a little concerned Harley's gonna kill herself, too, in the storyline.
I will cry.
I mean, like, I don't know, like... tears. This is one of the rougher stories I've read.
Even just... Even the Lois Lane part of it, that was that kind of that stopped me a little bit in my tracks.
Yeah,
the puddlers,
which was referenced in the first one.
Yep, and then talking about I actually love her, like the way King writes her too, because it's like that's a journalist the way she talks. Is ubiquitously a word? They would have done it in a ubiquitous manner.
And then she finally listens for 5 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is how's the information getting out?
Yeah.
Yeah, God, and then back to the confessionals.
Yeah.
The Superman one.
Was it the Superman one for you?
It was the Wonder Woman one, because I can relate to that. The Superman one just destroyed me on the fundamental level of this is literally what I argue with people about all the time when it comes to Superman, all the fucking time.
That's... For me, it was the Wonder Woman one. That's the one that got me.
I'm taken aback by all three. I don't want to put down any of them,
but...
The Wonder Woman one got me, too, and I think it's the, Clayman draws such a, like, an endearing faced Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something about, like, it's the fourth panel, and I guess the first panel as well. She's just looking straight at you.
Yeah.
And, well, it's the Wonder Woman one that just hit me the hardest is what it was for me. The Superman one, I knew it was this. Once I saw that they did Wonder Woman after that, it's like they're gonna do Superman, and I knew exactly what it's gonna be.
The Batman one was incredibly vulnerable and, like, just sad. Like, that it was.
Oh my god. Just the way he, like, the first four panels where he doesn't even say anything, I feel like are.
Some well, he of also the most has powerful. His mask off the entire time, too.
Yeah. Well, he starts in panel one, he's in his mask, and then he just, like, kind of pulls it back, and then, like, so tiredly sits down. So, like, it's such a testament to Clay Mann that you can just, like, feel the heaviness of him sitting down, even though you don't see, like, it's in between panels, and you can just feel it.
Yeah. Only two of those 9 panels have any dialogue in them.
Yep. I knew it was a short amount of dialogue in his, and that's...
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, the way he tries to justify it to himself still. Like,
I knew what route they were going to take, because when I saw the Batman one, I knew what route it was going to take. It was the Wonder Woman one that caught me off guard, because I was never really sure about that one. And then when it actually was written, I was like, Oh my god.
To see, I think, what is that, panel 7 and 8, too, with Batman, where he, like, cries, or holds back a tear, or something like that.
Turns his head away from it, and, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and then Wonder Woman,
too. It seems like he is losing his touch with reality, because the next set of pages after the Batman when he's in the middle of a field and he's Skeet's like, you know, where you been?
Yeah. Wow. Just wow.
Wow, it's like, it's really heavy talking
yeah,
about
it. Yeah, it really book. Is, because it's just so, it is, because like we went from happy to somber.
Yeah,
I know, right?
Really great. I didn't expect this to be what it is, so.
I mean, yeah. It was Tom King, and once I knew they were talking about the Sanctuary, I'm like, this is going to wreck people.
it's weird superheroes talking about superheroes, therapy sessions, basically. I feel like I was reading this issue, and I feel like this is what Alan Moore originally wanted to do when he pitched the idea of Watchmen, and have superheroes' vulnerable emotional sides.
Yeah.
And I feel like just now, like...
I will say with the Harley Quinn aspect of that page with her where she's like, I wish she didn't do this, I wish she didn't do that. I think the very end she even says she just wishes she didn't exist. And I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
And seeing a Harley Quinn, the funny character who's always like that in all reality, who's been probably put through the most abuse out of most than a lot of characters that we don't even think about because she's just funny all the time.
Yeah.
That's heart-wrenching, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and it... Now that I'm dead on the inside.
Yeah, no, seriously, I feel like this conversation.
I need to do an art pass on these books too, like just sort of slow roll going through them and looking at everything.
It's so good, but it's so sad. It's so hard to talk to other people about. Like, you need to unpack it with other people,
yeah,
and then both of we all just end up like hugging each other.
Yeah,
like,
I wasn't exactly sleepy before. I need a shoulder to cry on, too.
Basically, just like a circle of all of our heads under the one shoulder crying.
They need to be a Heroes in Crisis Center.
Yes. All right. Well, geez, with that heavy, heavy, heavy note. Yeah. All right. Well,
go read Sparrowhawk.
Yeah. Let's say goodbye in the saddest way possible.
Pretty much.
Goodbye.